The University of Kentucky School of Journalism and Media recently hosted an informative panel and series of discussions about the state of news and journalism today. Its moderator, Al Cross.
You can argue what the term fake news means. You can argue about the meaning of the term alternative fact. We decided to call it challenges to journalism because there are challenges that are technological, economic, cultural, and now political.
On this week's Eastern Standard, fake news, alternative facts, and challenges to journalism, we are interested in your questions, your comments, your personal stories, or observations. Write to us by email right now, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. You can send us a tweet at WEKUEST, post on the station Facebook page or the website. In just a little while, we'll open the phones for your calls as well. It's time for Eastern Standard, right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I am John Hingsbergen. Today, the topic of our program, fake news, alternative facts, challenges to journalism. Thank you for tuning in. We hope to have an interactive conversation about this very interesting and somewhat challenging topic. We have guests with us to share their perspective from the realm of education and academics, from journalism, and one of our guests kind of mixes the two in his career. That is Al Cross, associate professor in the School of Journalism and Telecommunications at the University of Kentucky and director of the Institute for Rural Journalism and Community Issues. And we'll hear from him in just a few moments. He was unable to join us live for the program, but joining us in the studio are first up, Dr. Pam Perry. And Pam is interim chair for the Eastern Kentucky University Department of Communications and associate professor of public relations at the university. Pam, thank you so much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Our listeners may also be familiar with the work of Joel Pett, a Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist for the Lexington Herald-Leader. Been there for 33 years, and his cartoons are syndicated in, dozens of newspapers across the country?
You know, I think you can say anything you want, given the topic of the show. I think they're in every paper there is.
Well, we hope that we're going to hear more of your sense of humor and cynicism during today's program as well. We will encourage you, our listeners, to email your questions, your comments, your personal stories or observations to us, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST. Tweeting and Twitter may be part of our conversation today, again, at WEKUEST. And in a little while, we'll open the phones. But let's go to Al Cross, associate professor in the School of Journalism and Telecom at the University of Kentucky and director of the Institute for Rural Journalism and Community Issues. A few days ago, I was able to chat with Al Cross about his observations on fake news and a recent series of panel discussions that they held on challenges to journalism.
Well, we've actually had a series of discussions and presentations, about one a week, actually, with the help of the Bluegrass chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists and the campus chapter of SPJ. This series is titled Challenges to Journalism. And you can argue what the term fake news means. You can argue about the meaning of the term alternative facts. Those were some initial labels that we used, but we concluded that because people put their own templates of meaning on those, that we really needed a broader title for it. So we decided to call it Challenges to Journalism because there are challenges that are technological, economic, cultural, and now political. And just yesterday, we were pleased to have with us a guy who spends time thinking about all of those, Tom Rosensteel, who is executive director of the American Press Institute in Northern Virginia, does work all over the country. He formerly headed the Pew Center for Excellence in Journalism and did a lot of polling about journalism and the news with the Pew Center.
Now, journalism has traditionally been recognized as the fifth estate, an important part of our system of government and of our lifestyle here in the U.S. How do you feel about these political challenges to journalism and the fact that many people, and I'm sure a lot of the general public, are beginning to be skeptical about what they read, what they see, what they hear.
Well, there's been a gradual decline over the last 30 years in the confidence that people say in polls they have in the mass media, newspapers, television networks, and so on. It's down to about 32% having a good deal or a lot of confidence. And I think that is partly a function of people no longer subscribing or regularly watching or listening to those news outlets. They get a lot of their information from social media, and a lot of that actually comes from news organizations indirectly. I think if you don't have a daily experience or a regular experience in the consumption of a news outlet, then you're less likely to have confidence in it. So I do think that there are some problems within the news media that cause these issues, but I also think that that's a hidden factor in that number.
So would you say this is a result of the fact that people are not listening to, watching, or reading news in long form? They're reading the very brief clickbait items that they see on Facebook or on a tweet or even an Instagram.
Right. Now, you know, the counter argument, of course, would be that, well, they're not reading those news sources because they no longer have trust in them. What's the cause and effect relationship here? But I think it clearly works both ways. I think that the principal challenge that journalism faces today is paying for it. You know, the most chilling thing I ever heard at a journalism convention was about 10 years ago when someone said, there is no longer any business model for news. You know, the old business model for news was that your news outlet was pretty much everything to everybody. You tried to maximize your circulation, and then you sold advertising on the basis of that as the way to reach the maximum number of people. Newspapers still reach more of the market in most places than any other kind of medium. But people tend to say that they get most of their news from television, which tends to be pretty superficial. And the strength of newspapers as an advertising medium has declined greatly. And that has led directly to a loss in staffing, and thus a loss in the a decline in the quality of the news product of the newspapers. And we're beginning to see that in television stations, too. So somebody's got to pay for the journalism to get done. When the founders of this country wrote the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, they included freedom of the press in the First Amendment because they knew that was necessary for democracy to operate properly. And I'm distributing these days a bumper sticker that says, support democracy, subscribe, because it's really necessary for the audience to pay more than it's been paying for news, because advertisers are not going to be paying for it. They are not paying for it. A lot of news organizations say their goal is to get half or more than half of their revenue from the audience. They have found, after years of putting stuff out on the internet for free, that there's a substantial number of people who are willing to pay a pretty good price for quality news coverage. After the election, the New York Times and the Washington Post both reported significant increases in their online subscriptions. And the Post said it was going to hire 50 more reporters with that money. That, to me, is the best example of how, in order to support democracy, you've got to subscribe to a news outlet, whether it be local, state, or national.
The president of the United States has labeled the newspaper, the New York Times, as the failing New York Times, has labeled many of the papers and many of the what we would consider mainstream news sources as fake news. What do you have to say about that? Is the president observing something or creating something?
Oh, he's trying to create a belief that you can't believe news sources that are trying to hold him accountable for what he does and says. You know, it's the longstanding strategy of an autocrat to want to be the primary source of information. to discredit the independent sources of information. And he's got a guy advising him who asserted that the news media were the opposition party. No, they're simply the adversarial group by nature, as envisioned in the Constitution. The people who are going to hold those who are elected and appointed accountable for their actions and make sure that voters can cast an informed vote the next time ballots are printed.
And the connection to the president's use of Twitter, for instance, his efforts to communicate directly with millions of people who are following him, do you see that as part of this effort to delegitimize, if that's a word,
sure.
The mainstream media?
He is using social media in an effective way. He has millions of Twitter followers, and at one of our programs recently, we had a rural editor say that he has people in his county tell him that it's not local news. They just get it from the president's Twitter feed or the congressman's Facebook page. The information being put out by people whom the news media are supposed to try to hold accountable. So we got a problem in this country if people are taking the word of public officials for things. We've got to be skeptics. That's what reporters and editors and producers are supposed to be by trade. We are skeptics. We don't take very much at face value because we are representatives of the public, and we've got to be independent in how we look at things. And I think almost all people in the reportorial media, as opposed to the commenting media, the reportorial media are really the news media. They approach the business in that fashion.
Last month, the press secretary or spokesman for the president, Sean Spicer, held a press briefing or gaggle, I guess it was, and eliminated or excluded a number of major news outlets. How do you feel about that? Was there anything illegal or wrong by this action, or is that the prerogative of elected officials and their representatives to decide which media they're going to speak with?
It's their prerogative, but I think they're shooting themselves in the foot when they do that because it looks really petty. The Associated Press reporter did the right thing when she saw that the New York Times and CNN and some other outlets were being excluded. She said, I'm not going to take part in this briefing. Because that's not the way it's supposed to work. There wasn't anything illegal about it, but I think it was certainly improper. There's a working relationship that any press office for a public official has to have with the news media, and that's not the way to handle it.
Al Cross is associate professor in the School of Journalism and Telecommunications at the University of Kentucky, director of the Institute for Rural Journalism and Community Issues. He was unable to join us live for our program on fake news and alternative facts this week, but we're glad to have his recorded comments, and we're going to go back to Al at some point later in the program. We have with us in the studio Dr. Pam Perry, who is interim chair for EKU's Department of Communications, and Joel Pett, Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist from the Lexington Herald-Leader. We're interested in hearing from you on the topic of fake news, alternative facts, and challenges to journalism as well. You can write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send us a tweet at wekuest. Maybe follow our Twitter feed at wekuest. And feel free to give us a call right now, 800-621-8890. In just a few moments, we'll talk with Pam Perry and Joel Pett about what we were discussing with Al Cross, and we hope to talk with you, 800-621-8890.
You are attacking our news organization. Can you give us a chance to ask a question, sir?
Go ahead.
Sir, can
quiet.
You state, can, Mr. President-elect,
go ahead.
Can you state categorically, Mr. President-elect, can you give us a question?
Don't be
You're attacking
rude.
Us. Can you give us a question?
Don't be rude.
Can you
not
give us a question?
Can you, not give you a
can,
question.
Can you state categorically?
You are fake news. You are fake news.
Fake news, alternative facts, and challenges to journalism, our topic on this week's Eastern Standard. I'm John Hingsbergen. And as promised, Pam Perry is a chair for EKU's Department of Communications. Joel Pett, Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist, they're with us in the studio. And after the conversation we just heard, or the part of the conversation with Al Cross, we'd like to pick up on that topic of fake news. And maybe we should start, Pam Perry, with defining news itself before we even define fake news.
That's a great idea, because today so many people don't seem to understand what news is. Longtime ABC News broadcaster David Brinkley once said, news is what I say it is. And he's right in the fact that we are the gatekeepers for the public in terms of what we allow in the news. But what we look for are things that are relevant to our readers, things that have proximity to the readers, involve prominent people, usually things that are odd or unusual, not the regular everyday occurrence, and that there's something that we believe the readers are interested in, or the viewers or the listeners. And so we kind of determine what goes through that gate as gatekeepers based upon the yardstick of what we think our readers, viewers, and listeners want to hear. So the reader is the ultimate, I think, yardstick for that.
The man once known as the most trusted man in America used to end his newscast with, "That's the way it is." That was Walter Cronkite of CBS News. And many of our listeners are not old enough to have ever heard Walter do the evening news. But things have changed in terms of how journalism is defined today, with many people now being able to consider themselves journalists who did not follow the standard path of studying journalism, studying reporting, beginning to work in a newspaper, working in radio and TV, and now people can blog and tweet and post on Facebook and declare themselves a journalist. How do we define a journalist?
It is much more difficult today, because back in the day when Walter Cronkite broadcast, there were very few networks and not nearly the social media, things like that we have today. But a journalist is somebody who seeks the truth on behalf of others. I was a reporter for 10 years before I went in the classroom, and every time I covered a hearing or went to cover any kind of event that was happening, I always saw myself as being in the place of the people who couldn't be there. So I would seek out the truth as I could, the facts as I could, and put them in an interesting story in the time available. I'm a graduate of the University of Missouri School of Journalism, and one of the definitions—
You're from Missouri.
I'm from Missouri. One of the definitions I heard of journalism was the best we could do by deadline. So sometimes you don't get the complete truth with one story, but you have to follow up and dig. But I always saw journalism as a public trust, and that you're a trustee of the public. Matter of fact, I think the first dean of the School of Journalism wrote a creed, the Journalist Creed, that says that we're anything less than the public service isn't journalism.
Let me draw Joel Pett into the conversation. Your approach to journalism is a little different than those of us who write words or talk words. You draw pictures and write captions and communicate through editorial cartooning.
Well, yeah, opinion journalism is obviously a very different animal than hardcore reporting. If I could just add to Pam's definition of news, she mentioned that we try to deliver people, you know, things they want to read, but we also have a responsibility to bring them things they may not know they need to read or hear about. I mean, when you take a poll to say, gee, what would you like to have in your Richmond Register? Nobody says, you know, the plight of those Syrian refugees. I'm really going to have to read more about that. The coming famine in South Sudan and Nigeria and Yemen this summer, because it's such an upbeat story. I just can't get enough of that. So, I mean, you do have to make decisions. And you're right, I'm not a trained journalist. I didn't go to journalism school. No.
Is that the case with editorial cartoonists in general,
you know,
would you say?
They come at it from all different angles. You know, there are writers who teach themselves to draw and artists who teach themselves to write and think. And just it's a very varied group of people, or it was before the collapsing business model that you mentioned a minute ago killed
it. How did you get where you are? You didn't study journalism. How did you end up becoming, for 33 years, a journalist and winning a Pulitzer Prize, for goodness sake?
Well, I'm tempted to give you a fake news answer to that, but I'm going to skip it. I just want to, if I may, dodge that question in the tradition of anybody. It's boring and long, and I just want to mention that I am not a journalist, but I've worked around and with them for 33 years. And I know I'm preaching to the choir here with your public radio audience, but the idea that our sitting president could say that journalists make things up is so preposterous. In fact, it's the only thing you can't do. if you, I mean, you can show your biases, you can be sloppy, you can do all that stuff and get a second chance. But if you make up one story and they catch you, your career is done. I've seen it. You know, it's just crazy. And very revealing, of course, about his personality and the fact that, you know, like everything else, he himself makes stuff up.
Well, obviously, being public radio, we try to remain objective and balanced, and we certainly want to hear those who disagree with your opinion in that case. But certainly a lot of people will agree. And from a journalistic point of view, who could deny what you're saying, that making facts up is not journalism, that's not news. We likewise have. We have Fox News. We have MSNBC. And some who would put CNN, and of course, again, our president has labeled CNN and the New York Times two somewhat respected journalistic organizations, at least at some times along the way, in that category of fake news. How do you all react to calling the New York Times fake news, for instance?
Well, there are several reactions that I have. First of all, I find it discouraging somewhat that the president would attack a mainstream outlet like that. But also, if you just look through history, that it's actually kind of a common thing. Every man who has ever occupied the Oval Office has not necessarily liked the way he is portrayed in the press. And so in some regards, when there's a clash between the press and the presidency, that's how the founders thought it ought to be. Hmm. That they're the fourth branch of government, and that they are a watchdog on the people who occupy that office. Now, I think that the clash doesn't always get – it seems like it's there all the time with our current president. But it's actually something that's gone on since the beginning of the Republic. If you go all the way back to John Adams, he signed the Alien and Sedition Act, which actually made it illegal to criticize the president. And so this is as long as the Republic.
Is this situation we're in today perhaps caused by the fact that we have a person in office as president who doesn't hold anything back? He's just willing to let it all hang out and send it out at 3:30 in the morning in a 140-character message?
I'll answer that, and then I'll pass it on if you want. Absolutely, I think that we have a new kind of president in that regard, and that's why he was elected. The folks who voted for him love that. They love that he says it. He appears to be being authentic when he does it, and I think that's actually why he got elected. And so I think a lot of people like that. There's also many Americans who don't. But I do think that his appearance of just saying everything that's on his mind resonates with some voters.
Well, they do like it. And I, in fact, like outspoken people, and I don't like political correctness, and I don't like the way it has manifested on college campuses. Some of my comedian friends won't do campus gigs anymore because of it. But the receivers of these messages have a little bit of responsibility as Americans in a democracy to discern this information, to process it and decide. You just can't have somebody saying, I saw thousands of Muslims celebrating 9/11, you know, 3 million illegal aliens voted for my opponent, you know, that sort of thing, and accept it as just as true as could be some other maybe factoid. I mean, you know, this is a terrific country, a great country, if I might say. And you have a responsibility as a consumer of news to pay a little bit of attention. It's not a very high bar right now.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, and we're talking about fake news, alternative facts, challenges to journalism. In the studio with me are Pam Perry, the interim chair for EKU's Department of Communications, and Joel Pett, a political cartoonist, Pulitzer Prize-winning political cartoonist from the Lexington Herald-Leader. We're engaging in a conversation with Al Cross of the Institute for Rural Journalism and the University of Kentucky, and we'll get back to Al in a recorded interview in a few minutes as well. We want to hear from you, your reactions to what you've heard on the air so far today. You can email us, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, or send a tweet at wekuest, or give us a call at 800-621-8890 and be part of our conversation. we're talking, Pam, you're talking about TV news, and I know you've written a book about President Eisenhower and his relationship to the media and use of television. For you, Pam and Joel, doesn't television itself tend to kind of, I apologize to my friends in television journalism, but doesn't television in itself just kind of move us into a realm of fake news in many ways, or at least the wrong emphasis on news? The fact that news is looking for things that are dramatic, things that are sensational, things that are shocking, perhaps, covering automobile accidents and fires when, gosh, that's not the most important thing that happened in our community in a given day, but it may be the thing that leads the evening newscast.
Well, with many institutions in society, the answer is yes and no. Television does many wonderful things. For example, once campaigns began to be televised, we got to see our candidates in ways that we never knew. It also, however, leads to superficiality, and so that's one of the problems. One of the things I maintain with television news is that in the 1980s, when we began to have 24/7 news, I loved it. I watched it, and I have news on whenever I'm home. However, now that you have several stations with 24/7 news all the time, it has changed the definition of news and kind of dumbed it down, because if you have to be on the air all the time, you're going to accept things at a lower standard than they used to. And so I think that's one of the things. And so it does make some of the arguments superficial. On the other hand, it makes it possible for millions of people to see things that they could never have seen before.
Well, I have to say I completely disagree with your premise. You can't blame the medium, and nor should we look for a solution to fake news in any institutional way. The only solution is individuals being, as I said before, more careful about what they choose to believe and repeat and retweet, and not just regular Americans, but people at 1600 Pennsylvania as well. There's great television news all over the world. You just have to switch your dial to it.
Have to be selective in which channels. Yeah. Just as we're selective in what newspapers or what radio
programs
or stations we listen
sure.
to.
Sure. And those temptations to, if it leads, it bleeds, ratings temptations are there in different forms in print media as well. I mean, there's a reason over my strenuous objections, the Lexington Herald Leader has run Wildcat basketball on page one of the paper as much as they can for my whole career there.
It's a big deal.
It's a big deal. And people want to hear it. I personally consider it, irresponsible, but I've lost that battle a long time ago.
I'd also like to add that in the 1950s, President Eisenhower embraced the medium of television, and he was the first president in America to put the presidential press conference on the record as a matter of course. And so when he put the presidential press conference on the record and then invited television cameras into the White House press office, he changed the relationship to the press, the president, and the people, because for the first time, the American people could see not only their president in action, but their press corps. And I think that was a very good step forward.
So for some of us who are concerned about the Trump administration's limitations or hesitance to draw the press into every event, that's not new. We're not, and there's nothing illegal, for instance, about keeping certain reporters out of a press gaggle or briefing. Nothing illegal about not speaking to the press.
No, there's no laws. It's all just protocol. Pam mentioned earlier the historic friction between every president and the press, and I feel compelled to point out there's a difference between saying, I don't like the way I'm being treated. I don't think the story was fair. I think people are getting the wrong impression, which is common and difficult to avoid. There's a difference between that and saying these are bad people and these are liars and they are making things up and you can't trust them. There's a huge difference there.
We want to invite our listeners to be part of the conversation, and I'm sure we're going to have some reactions here. We have a couple of already, and I want to acknowledge a couple of emails we've received. There's a caller waiting on the line, and we'll get to in just a few minutes as well. Our email address, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest. I need to look over at the Twitter account and see if anyone has written to us there. Or you can call us at 800-621-8890. An email that came in before the program today, and this is from Ed from Lexington, and see if I can summarize. He says, I'm a moderate. I like some policies on the left and right, as well as dislike policies on both sides. I have friends on both sides. The thing that really sticks out to me is that during the Bush, Obama, and now Trump administrations, the political emails I received from my friends that have been blatantly false, now called fake news, have been from the right. It got so bad during the Obama years, I started using verification sites such as Snopes, Truth or Fiction, Urban Legend, Hoax Slayer, Fact Check, etc., to check them out. And his bottom line question, why do the vast majority of false claims come from the right?
Well, there's a lot to that question. I don't know that I entirely accept the premise that that's the purview of the right, although I do think that a lot of it has come from the president's supporters and the president himself, who currently occupies the Oval Office. But I do think that when the discourse at the highest office of the land and you see in the different outlets of the media is the way it is today, it just trickles down to the public, or maybe it started with the public, and that's why we had such an interesting election in 2016. I do want to point out one statistic that I found really interesting. The Newseum Institute, which is part of the museum in Washington, D.C., annually does a State of the First Amendment report. And in 2016, one of the findings was that 10% of Americans found that the press coverage of the election was good and accurate. That means 90% found it inaccurate. And so within that range, I think you find people of all ilks and stripes of political persuasions, because I think a lot of people are dissatisfied, and we saw that in 2016.
Pam Perry is interim chair for EKU's Department of Communications. Joel Pett is editorial cartoonist, Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist for the Lexington Herald Leader. We'll be back with them in just a few moments. We're going to talk more with Al Cross. I do want to acknowledge this email from Michael, who writes to us saying, the thing that bothers me is when Trump or his people say something that is easily debunked, the media continue to cover it and call it controversy. First, it should be called a lie, and second, the subject should be dropped. Michael, thank you for that comment. We have on the line Charles in Lexington. We hope to get to Charles in a few minutes in the next segment of the show. Our line is open at 800-621-8890. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. This might be the kind of topic you might want to carry on a conversation on our Facebook page after the show. The show is live on Thursday mornings, but any time you can interact with each other on the Facebook page or the WEKU website, weku.fm. More of Eastern Standard in a moment.
You are fake news. You are fake news. You are fake news.
Fake news is the topic of our show this week on Eastern Standard. I'm John Hingsbergen, with me in the studio, Pam Perry and Joel Pett. We also have Al Cross standing by. We recorded an interview with him last week, and we'll get back to him in just a few moments. But let's go ahead and talk to at least one listener before we hear from Al Cross again. Let's talk to Charles in Lexington, who's been waiting on the line. Charles, thank you for being patient with us. Go right ahead.
This is Charles in Lexington. First, I want to compliment Mr. Pett on his perceptive pen and mind. I really enjoy his editorial cartoons. But what I want to throw out to the newspaper people, especially Mr. Cross, is I think that our larger newspapers are missing the boat on having just limited pages of letters to the editor. If you look at the Mountain newspapers, I've got a friend who works in a civil engineering firm, and they get a lot of the Mountain newspapers. They've got dozens of letters, you know, from the readers. And I think you get the local community involved that way. People love seeing their name in print. They love going back and forth with each other, and maybe even have, like, recurring issues, you know, that people can write in about and comment on, or you know, have little, you know, what do you think about this topic, and have people write in And I think that that would help the newspapers a lot. And then the final point I would like to make is we are totally lacking in civics education in this country, in our schools and in our community. And the newspapers could really pick up the ball there and run with it and do some kind of series and re-educate Americans about what our country is and how it's supposed to run.
All right, Charles, thank you. Thank you so much for those comments. Let me ask Joel and Pam, both of you, is it not true that newspapers are moving away from letters to the editors? I feel like I've been hearing lately that many are really reducing that element of what they do.
You know, I don't know if that's true across the industry. I think that the caller's point about how interesting they are in, he specified certain papers, but just broadly, I think is exactly right. And we have always prided ourselves at the Lexington Herald Leader on running, you know, the letters, even the ones that, you know, people might think are a little offbeat. And they're really, really interesting. He's right. People like to see them in print. We're actually one of the only papers also that prints political cartoons to the editor. Maybe the only paper. I've never seen it anywhere
else. People draw their own.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And we're super proud of that. And it's a focal point that that readers really like. I don't know if they're folding up across the country, but I will say that historically, I think a lot of big papers have gleaned them for, you know, what they think is important, which may be, you know, a little piece of the elitism that.
And there's also, editing to fit the paper's ideology.
Yeah, well, that's unavoidable. Not to fit the ideology, but to fit the space. No, we don't ever change anybody's point of view.
No, but I mean in terms of the choice of the editor,
right.
The letters.
Of course, that's subjective. Of course it is.
Well, I agree with the caller both points. Again, I don't know for sure across the country if they're rolling up letters to the editor pages, but the more letters, the more community involvement, the better. That newspapers are supposed to be a reflection of and trustees of their community. So the more letters, the better, I say. I also want to agree with the caller's other point about education. Again, calling attention to the Newseum Institute in Washington, D.C.
Boy, I love the museum. I've had the opportunity to get there twice, thankfully.
And their State of the Union, or State of the First Amendment report this year says that 39% of Americans cannot name one of the five freedoms protected by the First Amendment. The First Amendment protects speech, the right to petition our government, assembly, press, and religion. And almost 40% of Americans don't know that. And I find that we do need more civic education.
We'll be back with Pam Perry and Joel Pett. And we do want to get to some more listener comments, some calls waiting on the line. I want to get back to Al Cross because the conversation with him was such a good conversation. Al is associate professor in the School of Journalism and Telecom at the University of Kentucky and director of the Institute for Rural Journalism and Community Issues. And in our conversation recorded, spoke a little bit about is there a situation of the possibility of fake news occurring right here closer to home?
Are there similar things happening on the state level, for instance, in Kentucky?
Yes. The governor's office uses social media a good bit. You know, Governor Bevin seems to prefer to have a Facebook conference, as one of his supporters called it, instead of a news conference. You know, if he wants to attack somebody or some group, he does that with Facebook Live and doesn't get subjected to questions. He is not all that accessible to traditional news media and seems more interested in using social media to keep firming up the base. And I suppose he thinks expand his base, but I think that that's yet to be proven that you can really effectively communicate with the entire public that way. He needs to be more open to traditional media.
What is the antidote? What is the cure for this virus that is spreading, this skepticism about mainstream media, about journalism in general? Is there something journalism or that society in general can do to reverse this trend and reestablish the rightful role of journalists?
Well, journalists just have to do their jobs, but I think we have to be all the more careful about how we do them. And we also have to understand that the world has changed. Tom Rosensteel made several good points yesterday that I'll borrow from. You know, we now live in an age of social media. Social media rules. It has more influence than traditional media directly. And social media is risky because the people who are transmitting things on it do not practice the discipline of verification, which is the essential thing about journalism. You know, you just see something that's entertaining or looks good. You might not even read it, and you share it. You are implicitly vouching for it, even though you haven't really checked it out. Journalists check things out. And that's what makes journalism, the news media, different from social and other media. Now, journalists have to understand that. You know, they have to understand that back in the old days, you could say, well, this story comes from the Courier-Journal. That's a reputable news outlet, and I'll believe that. Well, today, if a story gets shared in social media, the recipients are already getting some vouching from their friends who just shared it. They don't think about what the ultimate source was so much. It's called the atomization of news. You know, we're not seeing news with a brand on it anymore. We're seeing it shared through friends. And because friends tend to agree with each other, that leads people to a filter bubble. They tend to get information that confirms what they already believe instead of information that may run contrary to their beliefs, but may in fact be more factual. So I think it's really healthy for people to have a diverse group of friends on social media. You need liberals and conservatives and moderates and libertarians and, you know, people who like big government and people who don't like it. That's one thing I have always tried to do as a political journalist is maintain a wide variety of sources, and that evolved into a wide variety of friends on Facebook, and I'm glad I have that sort of diverse source of information.
Now that we're down to that point of having to be our own news editors or our own fact checkers, is there anything else you would suggest beyond this kind of diversity on Facebook and social media? What else can the average listener, reader, consumer of news do to get a sense that they're not looking at fake news?
Well, they need to understand what's fact and what's opinion. A lot of things that are presented as the fact are really opinion. Cable TV news is a lot of that. You know, you get talking heads arguing instead of facts being presented. There also needs to be an understanding that certain news outlets are reliable and others not so much. You know, the New York Times may have a liberal editorial policy, but it's a factually based news organization. The Wall Street Journal may have a conservative editorial policy. Yes, it does, but it's a factual-based news organization. MSNBC may have a slogan called Lean Forward because it skews to the liberal or progressive point of view, but it's part of NBC, and that's a legitimate news organization that's about reporting facts.
Al Cross, anything else you think we need to make sure we include in our conversation about fake news and alternative facts?
Support democracy. Subscribe to independent journalism. Somebody's got to pay for it if this country's going to work.
Where can we get those bumper stickers?
You can email me at al.cross@uky.edu.
Excellent. Al Cross is associate professor in the School of Journalism and Media at UK and director of the Institute for Rural Journalism. Thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome, John.
With us still in the studio are Pam Perry and Joel Pett. Reactions to Al Cross and his comments about the antidote to fake news.
Well, he's exactly right, and so was Charles, the caller, that civics and involvement, and specifically, of course, from Al's point of view, subscribing to media that you know to be reliable, that's all crucial. So he's right on the mark. By the way, you know, you said Al was unable to be with us, but I have an alternative fact here. I believe he was unwilling to be here with you.
He didn't want to face you?
It's personal, and it's about you. That's just what I heard. I heard that.
All right.
So
well,
I wanted to share something
to
with you,
to
just
see more
so
about that.
People know how insidious this is. I was reading some things in preparation for this show, and, you know, a lot of fake news. The one of your bloggers earlier asked about the, you know, why does it all come from the right? The fact is most of it has no ideology. There are these, you know, algorithms of huge networks of people that have thousands of phony social media sites, accounts, and they spread stuff out. You know, they just make stuff up. Mike Pence killed in a plane crash. Boom, put it out there. And as soon as anyone else taps into it, the whole electronic record of it disappears and it becomes someone else's baby.
Now, why? What's the purpose behind it? Is somebody making money off of that?
No, not that particular scheme. That's just, you know, evildoers. We're going to get them. We're going to smoke them out. They're evildoers. You know, I don't know. People just want to blow stuff up. You know, there's a lot of people who are just delighted with their newfound ability to wreck stuff.
Well, I agree as well with a lot of what Al Cross said. I would add to that that I do think that it is the citizen's responsibility to be informed and know what's going on. One of the things that I teach in my classroom is what we call media literacy, and that means don't just take one source and trust it. I encourage my students to watch Fox News, watch MSNBC, watch CNN, listen to NPR, read a newspaper, and somewhere in all of that, you will find a truth that is helpful. Another saying that I heard when I was a student at Mizzou, and I cannot attribute it to a person, it was just kind of a joke around the newsroom, that if your mother says she loves you, right, ask your dad if it's true.
Yeah, check it out.
Check your
so
facts,
don't take right? any fact unchecked.
One of the core elements of journalism.
And the citizens have a responsibility as well as reporters to do that.
Let's go back to the phone and talk to Mike from Whitley City, Kentucky. Mike, thank you for spending so much time waiting for us to be part of the show. Go right ahead.
Hi, am I on?
You're on the air, finally.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I had civics, you know, tying into the conversation when I was in the late 70s, and it took me several years to realize and put it all together, how Fox represents one side and CNN the other. And if we could educate our younger kids, they don't seem to be interested. They don't have the interest in learning. There's just very few that watch the news. So the fake media, you know, I can sort through it, but I wonder about my daughter, a high school student. You know, my question was, kind of got off track, was, you know, this morning where Trump kind of, we held him up on his idea to, with the immigration ban, even with the two judges going against him, the Supreme Court will probably rule in favor of him. If North Korea did something and he got pissed off and wanted to nuke him, could we hold him up? You know, that's pretty much my question.
Probably not an answer. None of us can provide that answer except for the fact the role that journalism might play in reporting on what happens with such matters.
I'm pretty sure I just read on the internet that we did nuke North Korea like a half hour ago. I'm sure that's good.
And we've got to watch some
There's
of these
a picture
things
here
throwing,
too.
Throwing out there. Hopefully we're not going to originate any fake news during today's program. Thank you, Mike, for that call.
Yeah, I used to read National Enquirer when I was a young kid, and we would laugh at it because I knew what it was. But there's no way to distinguish what is what nowadays.
Good point about the fact that the National Enquirer has been out there.
There's always been fake news.
Little doubt about that. Here's an email from a listener who writes in, choosing to remain anonymous, and she is a graduate teaching assistant, teaches the equivalent of freshman research and composition. She is teaching public speaking, responsible research, argumentation, critical thinking. And she brings up issues about the fact that we need to invest more time and money in humanities and in education. When the humanities, when classes that teach critical thinking, research, and empathy are devalued and defunded, is it any surprise that we are seeing fake news becoming such a problem? Very profound comment.
Yeah, I would just say amen to that, that critical thinking is perhaps the most important thing we teach today. And I would argue we teach that in all classes. I certainly support the humanities in my discipline, but I think that students today need and citizens today need to be critical thinkers when they're exposed to the news and other sources of information.
Pam Perry and Joel Pett, in the final moments of our program, what each of you, I'd like each of you to tell me a source or two for legitimate news that you generally trust all the time as a way to get beyond the fake.
Well, this is going to sound like I'm running for public office, but one of my favorite sources is NPR. And so I do listen to NPR. I also do watch and I alternate different cable news sources to find different opinions out there. That's less for news, but more opinions. But I do watch Fox. I do watch MSNBC. I watch CNN. And then I try to read a paper every now and then. And I do check sites. I am a reader. I do go online and read the New York Times because I think it is a critical source of information. And there are many, many others, the Washington Post, and many other sources.
Joel Pett?
You know, it's pretty much my job to consume media like all day, every day.
Sure.
And it's great. It's a great aspect of the job. And I don't want to seem, you know, like I'm sucking up to you too bad, but this radio station is really invaluable in the region. And the fact that you have chosen to do information all day long and not music or infotainment is really important to the region, I think.
Well, it's part of a trend.
And
of
everybody,
things that happened after 9/11, actually.
I know. Everybody doesn't have the luxury of, you know, subjecting themselves to all sorts of media all day like I do. But, you know, if you just even listen to On Point a couple of times a week or that, that Sunday night show Intelligence Squared, you know, you'd be doing yourself a big favor. So thank you for that.
We'll be welcoming you back to the studio, inviting you back. Joel Pett, Pam Perry, thank you for being part of the program. Also, Al Cross. Eastern Standard is a production of WEKU at Eastern Kentucky University. This program is live on Thursday mornings. It's repeated on Sunday evenings at 6 o'clock. A podcast of the show and for available for online listening directly from the website will be available within the hour on this Thursday afternoon. We're always glad to hear from you. WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Thank you to Marissa Hempel and Brian Bartlett for helping put the program together today.